And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And what's up? Here's the start of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Michael Beller and Derek Van Riper here with you today. And of course, we are presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. We're now about 1 week into the start of the second half of the season, DVR, and I don't know, it feels like to me most of the big moves that you've made or are going to make this season have already been made, and a lot of what you do from this point forward, a lot of your success from this point forward is going to be determined by guys already on your roster or guys who are seemingly known commodities. That's what we're going to get into here on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're going to take a look at some second half, some rest of season projections for, you know, players that DVR and I just found intriguing for whatever the reason might be. And we're just going to talk through them, whether we think they can hit those projections, maybe surpass those projections, maybe fall short of those projections. Let's dive in with a guy who maybe is going to be on a new team any day now here, DVR, and it's Brian Reynolds. Brian Reynolds, you can see the projections coming at the bottom of the screen. We'll have that for every player. In this case, or in every case, it's going to be projections from the bat X. So you see what Brian Reynolds is projected to do the rest of the season. A really strong first half for Brian Reynolds, deserving all-star bid for him. Yes, the trade question that looms over his head could change things for him, depending on where he goes, if he does indeed go from Pittsburgh. But these projections on their face, they feel fair to me. Where are you at on this?
Yeah, I think this is the player Brian Reynolds reasonably should be. I mean, we saw in 2019, his first season in Pittsburgh, he had an unexpectedly great season. Hit 314, had a 377 OBP, didn't have a ton of power, hit 16 home runs that year, but was basically on a per game basis, a 20 home run guy with nice run production, even in a below average lineup. He's adding power, and I think the thing I like, the projections we're running with here, are the rest of season projections from the Bat X, and the Bat X accounts for Statcast information. Mm-hmm. And with Brian Reynolds, I think when you see, you know, an average exit velocity that is low, you're like, oh, okay, like maybe he's not that good. No, here's the thing. The max exit velo is legit, 87th percentile there. All the X stats look really good. X WOBA, XBA, X slug. The barrel rate is in the 71st percentile. He's doing the types of things you need to do damage with power. And he's a great hitter. He's shown great plate skills pretty much the entire time he's been in the big leagues. Among the players that you look back at the shortened season and just say, something just wasn't right with him. I mean, a 189, 275, 357 line last season, I think made a lot of people look at 2019 and wonder if that was an outlier. But no, he's actually even better than the player he was upon debut. And if he gets traded, he could end up in a more hitter-friendly ballpark, which could boost these numbers, and he'll be in a more top-to-bottom quality lineup, which will help those counting stats even further. So I love this line for Reynolds. I think he's sort of like a buy-high sort of player right now. If you're in a league that allows trading, he might be someone that you want to go get right now, because I think he can reach those numbers if the Pirates decide to hold on to him. He's not an expiring contract guy, so if they don't get an offer they like, he could stay in Pittsburgh, yep. But he could still meet those expectations set by those projections, even without a trade to a contender.
I think that's the concern in terms of the trade to the contender. And again, it's not a concern because we've seen him do just fine, even in PNC Park with that Pirates lineup around him. Pretty much anywhere where he would go would be an environmental upgrade, both ballpark and lineup. But the fact that he's not an expiring contract, the Pirates could re-engage trade discussions in the winter. They could have these trade discussions at next year's trade deadline if they are still not a contending team. So even though he would be, you can make an argument, if not the very best bat on the market. Chris Bryant's definitely out there right now as one guy who maybe you could argue over Brian Reynolds, one of the three or four best bats on the market without question. So I think they're going to get good offers for him, but they don't necessarily need to press and push that. Love that you referenced buy high too. You know, I love having that discussion, buy high, sell low. Let's flip that on its head and talk about it in that way. And I agree with you that Brian Reynolds is a buy high guy. If someone thinks that the first half represents him playing at 110% of expectation level, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that's the case. And so you can get that, if you can get him at that sort of discounted price, I would love getting in on Brian Reynolds. I think you hit all the marks exactly. The exit velo, the max exit velo being where it was, 2020 being an anomalous 60-game sample for him. I think he checks all those boxes. 2019 and 2021 really looking like the real Brian Reynolds, and would like to see him get moved. I'm going to go to the first guy who I threw in the sheet, and it's Anthony Rendon. And yeah, he had a little bit of a setback a couple of days ago, but BatX projects him to play 48 games. So that would put him back, you know, somewhere in early August. And even with that setback, it seems like that's what the Angels are potentially anticipating. So that's written in pencil. But I really want to get in on Anthony Rendon. And I know that injury optimism is a very dangerous whim to indulge, but nothing that was going on with Anthony Rendon before this hamstring injury made any sense. And you look at some of the peripherals, he still was not striking out very much. He was still taking his walks. He was not swinging and missing very often. He was not chasing pitches out of the zone. It was just all of his hard hit metrics came down, and they came down out of nowhere. And you go back and look at his Statcast numbers from 2020, and everything you look for in terms of exit velocity and X-slug and all of that is in the red. Some of it is deep red, some of it is faded red, but it's all red. 2020, that was the case for him. 2019, it is extremely deep red. You go back to 2018, it is all red. And this was a guy who, over his entire career, has hit basically everything in sight. Never a huge power guy until a couple of seasons ago, but always hit for decent power, always hit, period. He went years and years and years as one of the most underappreciated players in the fantasy game. And then you get to 2021, and suddenly he's forgotten how to hit. He's fallen off a cliff at 31 years old. Like, none of this DVR adds up to me. I think we can explain it away as a little bit of injuries during the first half and a little bit of just, you know, having a bad sample. We've seen it from so many guys. Brian Reynolds last year, Jose Ramirez has done this a few times. I think it was just, you know, a bad stretch and a prolonged bad stretch, but a bad stretch and not a new player. Anthony Rendon is someone who I would be willing to go out and try to acquire, understanding the risk that I am taking on if he's made available to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the skills and the numbers you see projected, like, I have no issues with Rendon getting back to that level. I wouldn't even be surprised if he was better than that, if he beat a .273 projection with his batting average the rest of the way. It's just a question of how bad was that setback? You know, the hamstring has been a major problem for him. Rendon had the durability questions coming out of the draft several years ago. He could have been a 1-1 pick coming out of Rice, and the injury concerns enabled him to fall a little bit to the Nats as an early first rounder. And from 2016 to 2019, played at least 136 games every single season. Talk about a guy that had three consecutive 300 seasons. He's had a 400 OBP in three of the last four seasons entering this one. And I know there's a little bit of a park downgrade power-wise as a righty going from Nationals Park to Angel Stadium, but that does not explain what is happening here. I think it's really just a matter of health. And I think the harder question to answer is, in shallow leagues where you don't have enough IL spots or you don't have any IL spots, If the setback ends up being two or three more weeks, do you get to a point where you may have to think about cutting him, which is just an incredibly difficult question to face because he was expensive on draft day. And I think if we're looking ahead to 2022, almost regardless of what happens down the stretch this year, I expect that I'll have a ton of Anthony Rendon at what will be a discounted price going into 2022. Like, even if he comes back in a couple of weeks and is healthy, plays another 40 games or so, if he has a 100 games where he hits .265 or .270 with a dozen homers this year and half a season's worth of run production, like, that's not what people paid for in the first few rounds. So he's going to fall to that probably 75 to 100 range overall, and that's going to be a value play, kind of like where you know, Jose Altuve and Chris Bryant, where those guys were going in this year's drafts, I think that's where Rendon is going to fall in next year's draft. So I'm absolutely a believer in him long term. Yeah, maybe he's post peak, but he has the type of skills that should age very gracefully. He's still a good defender, so he's going to play every day when he's healthy. I'm all in on Rendon when he's back, and I believe in those numbers.
Post-peak for the power, I think that's pretty safe to say. But the rest of the skill set, I think, is going to age very well. I think you and I, if we're in any leagues together next year, we're going to be competing for Anthony Rendon against one another. Let's take a little bit of a break from the scheduled discussion here and bring in a question, because this guy, near and dear to your heart, that we're getting a question from Nathan Burris. Willie Peralta, got to bring him up here. Not for real, right? I mean, you and I talked about him a little bit on the waiver show over the weekend. And, I mean, he's throwing the ball well. I still think he's someone who you can use in the right matchups, but not someone who you're going to be using just regardless going forward.
Yeah, I think he's very matchup dependent. I think pitching in Detroit, you can trust him a little bit because it's a more pitcher-friendly environment. But I absolutely think, because the K rate has been so low, he's still more of a streamer in like a 15-team league or something deeper. If he had a two-start week and there were good matchups, you could use him in a 12. The thing that's different about Willie Peralta is the split change. We talked about that, I think, on Sunday a little bit. Yep. And I know our guy Ian Kahn, under the radar, was pushing Peralta on yesterday's show. It's hard to go against Ian, but I think the problem I have with Peralta is that even with that nasty split change, his K rate is ridiculously low, 15.9%. About 5.5 Ks per nine. His control's still not very good, even though it's better than it's been the last couple of seasons that we've seen him in the big leagues. So tread carefully. It's a good story, but it might not have the happiest of endings, even with that new pitch.
All right, let's get on to our previously scheduled show and talk about Paul Goldschmidt. You see the projected rest of season numbers down there at the bottom of the page. And yeah, more or less they match up with where he's been to this point, with the possible exception of the slugging percentage. He's sitting on the season at 272, 341, 454, 16 homers. So the Bad X expects a little bit more power, a little bit more on base, the same exact batting average. And it's been a weird season, really, in St. Louis for a lot of these guys. We're actually going to talk about someone else on this team a little bit later in this show. Really, the only person I think who's lived up to expectations, I guess there's two who have matched expectations all season, Nolan Arenado, Tyler O'Neill surpassing expectations, I think, to this point of the season. Paul Goldschmidt, after being a perennial MVP candidate earlier in his career, seems to have settled into being this brand of player, the 290, 400, 500 guy, maybe not really in the tank anymore for Paul Goldschmidt. Do you think these numbers look right for him the rest of the season, DVR?
Yeah, I think basically, I think with being in St. Louis especially, that's a very pitcher-friendly environment. I think that's actually hurting him a little bit. Lineup around him is not great either, so that works against him. But the StatCast numbers are good. In the StatCast era, Goldschmidt's never had a better average exit velocity than he has right now. The maxes are still in line with basically everything he's done over the past 6 years now. The X stats are great across the board. This is the best XBA we've seen from him in the StatCast era. The X slug is really good. The hard hit rate's as high as it's ever been since we've been able to measure that with StatCast. So I think if you look at the plate skills, he's still able to keep the K rate around 20%. He doesn't walk as much as he used to, so that drags down the runs a little bit. But he's still a really good player at an advanced age. And I wonder if people maybe have overcorrected just a little bit. They've buried him as the old guy that has lost a lot of power. I think he's lost a little power because of the park, but I think he could be the kind of player that makes a surprising impact for the people that have been just kind of sitting there. Every week, he's your first baseman. He's your corner infielder. You don't really think much about it. You just leave him in your lineup. A total crockpot sort of player, right? Set it and forget it. But you might actually find out that what the crockpot generates this time actually tastes a little better than you expect. I think Goldschmidt could maybe pop over like 15 or 17 home runs the rest of the way, because he does play every day and he's still smoking the ball when he makes contact. And he brought the K rate down from where it was a couple of years ago. Like, there was a point, I think it was two seasons ago in 2019, the K rate was closer to 25%. The fact that he's been able to keep it down is a really good sign for him to continue to age gracefully.
Yeah, I think you're totally right about that. And even if he just stays at this projection of homers, 13 homers gives him 29 on the season. And, you know, I was going to call him Joey Votto because that's what I have in my head when we're thinking about Paul Goldschmidt. Is he following that same Joey Votto arc? I mean, he had two seasons of 36 homers. So it's not like we're talking about a 40 or 42 or 45 homer guy falling down to the high 20s. A little bit of power loss? Yeah, probably a little bit. He's in his age 33 season. I think that's to be expected, but not a power outage sort of guy. And so the only thing I worry about him is what you referenced in terms of the team context and the ballpark context. That's going to be a persistent worry for the rest of the season, but worry to the point that you really think that Paul Goldschmidt's going to come south of these numbers, I don't think so. Maybe the counting stats aren't exactly what you want them to be because that lineup around him just isn't what a lot of people expected it to be this season. So that maybe hurts him a little bit, but Paul Goldschmidt still feels like a set it and forget it crockpot sort of player, to steal DVR's very clever line. Let's stick in this division, go to a guy who maybe we didn't think we were going to be talking about a lot this season, but we have Jonathan India. There are the rest of season number projections for Jonathan India, and this guy has made himself an instrumental player for the Cincinnati Reds, not just for this season, but for, I think, a few seasons to come. I really wanted to see them push the Brewers when it looked like they were maybe going to be doing that a couple of weeks ago. Doesn't seem like that's quite in the cards for the Reds, but this is a guy who's hitting 276 with a 406 OBP, a 425 slug. He's got 8 homers and 7 steals, so he hits those projections. You're looking at a 17-homer, 12-steal season with solid rates. Really love what we've seen from Jonathan India to this point of the season. Do you think he can keep this up?
Yeah, good categorical balance really across the board. And I think for a guy singing big league pitching for the first time, only striking out 22% of the time, maybe it's some room for improvement with the K rate as he gets more and more exposure to big league pitching. I would be inclined to say that he could probably go over that batting average number. That 256 actually seems a touch on the low side. I think the power that he's showing is really encouraging, if only because some of the numbers we saw in the minors, the upper levels of the minors, made it look like the Reds might have had a bust on their hands with that fifth overall pick in 2018. Clearly an important part of this lineup and taking on a prominent role because he gets on base so much. So I'd be probably over across the board on the slash line and probably right on that home run total. And for what it's worth, I think the Bat X generally gives favorable projections to Reds hitters. I mean, Jesse Winker, we've talked about on a bunch of shows, has reached sort of MVP levels. Nick Castellanos isn't far behind him. I think Eugenio Suarez bounce back is still kind of on the page if you're looking for it. So I think the park plays a huge role in this, but India is a much better player and a very balanced player, but a much better player than we expected him to be based on some of the missing power output in those upper levels of the minors.
Yeah, I'm not fully buying the power for the remainder of the season, but I do think that he's going to be a useful player for the rest of the season. And I just want to see this one. I mean, you can see over my shoulder here. No surprise who I cheer for, but I want to see this team just stay healthy and like compete to its highest level one of these seasons, like the Chargers, the Los Angeles Chargers of Major League Baseball here, where every season's like, I don't know. The Reds stay healthy and put it all together. There's a lot of talent on paper. We haven't seen them do it all. Jonathan India can be a sort of guy who is a big contributory player to that. Maybe not this season in terms of the Reds competing for a playoff spot, but the in seasons to come. We got a comment here from our buddy Yancey Eaton. Listen to this one, DVR, 2x speed podcast listener watching us live. We hear you, Yancey. It definitely changes things. I would love to hear our voices, DVR, sped up at 2x. Probably, I mean, maybe get a little Alvin and the Chipmunks action in there with the baritone. But we thank you, Yancey, for checking us out live here today on The Athletic.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm going to jump to Jake Cronenworth. Jake Cronenworth, I think, is having, you know, a fascinating season. We've seen the power pick up toward the back end of the first half. Rest of season numbers down there for you. This is a player who I was really interested in, really all season, or all draft season, excuse me, because of the positional versatility, because of what seemed to be an ascending team in San Diego, the fact that it seemed like he was going to be someone locked into some sort of position. You know, second base, obviously the primary one, but seemed like with his versatility, he was going to get to play mostly every day for this team. But I got to admit, he has definitely surpassed my expectations, hitting 281, 354, 472 with 13 homers and four steals, 65 runs scored. Thank you, Padres offense. And thank you, Jake, for playing every single day. The rest of season numbers see him coming down a little bit in terms of getting on base and hitting for power. I'm not there. I'm not there with the bad XDVR. I think he can stay at what he's been this season. And the main reason I think that is because let's go back to last season. Again, to repeat this year, 281, 354, 472, and 405 plate appearances. Last year, 285, 354, 477, and 192 plate appearances. Basically, you put those two seasons together, you've got a full 162-game season, and he has been this type of guy with an offseason slotted in between. So I think even though it would be just one season, I'm willing to take these numbers at face value. I think that we would paint those rest of season numbers accurately as a disappointment for Jake Cronenworth the rest of the season. Not the homers or the steals. I think those are right on. I think if we're talking about him as a, you know, 20 homer, 12 steal sort of guy, then we're feeling pretty good about that. But it's the slash line, I think, undersells the player that Jake Cronenworth has proved himself to be over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, the consistency, especially debuting in the pandemic year, is remarkable. The plate skills have been steady. What's strange to me is that he's added power this year, had more home runs while showing a reduced barrel rate and reduced hard hit rate. Because the plate discipline is so good, though, I think he's an extremely high floor player. That versatility you mentioned defensively is excellent. You love having that. Jake Cronenworth has been 25% better than a league average player through his first 149 games in the big leagues. It's a pretty short list of guys that play at that level right away. I wonder if because he debuted at an older age, if he's already kind of closer to his peak, though. He's already 27 years old. Is there another level there? Can he unlock a full, like, 25 home run season in the future? Like, I'd probably bet against that. I think I'm with you on the average and OBP maybe being a tick on the light side, but I'm not quite as excited about him as you are. I think those numbers are very close to what I would expect from him going forward. A better all-around player than I thought. I figured the K rate would come up a little bit with, you know, a longer window to face big league pitching, but a really nice player. And I think where I think I disagree most with the projection is actually the runs and the RBIs, because I think the lineup context for the Padres, it might not be a top three offense, at least it hasn't been so far, but they could be one of the league's best offenses down the stretch. So I think you could get more runs and RBIs than you're expecting from Cronenworth the rest of the way.
Yeah, and you're seeing him hit in the top third of the lineup all season long. He's pretty much locked into the three spot. You got Fernando Tatis hitting second for this team every day. Manny Machado hitting fourth. Tommy Pham hitting fifth. Sometimes he moves up to the top spot. But no matter what, Jake Cronenworth is surrounded by great hitters and guys who are really having nice seasons. And we've seen Tommy Pham surge over the last, 2 months or so, something you and I talked about on last week's episode. So definitely love that lineup context for Jake Cronenworth. And the 65 runs and 40 RBI he has to this point of the season suggests just how good he could be in those two categories the rest of the way. Let's jump back to that Paul Goldschmidt teammate I hinted at a little earlier. Harrison Bader, the next guy up for us here. These feel fair to me. These projections feel fair to me. This was someone that you wanted to get into the show. So what are you looking at? What about these projections jumped out that had you wanting to talk about him?
I just think with Bader, we have this question of when do we start to believe that the improvements he's shown to his strikeout rate are actually real? I think projections are pretty level-headed compared to a person in this case. if you look at the Bat X, it's got him at 25.4%. The rest of the way, that would be a career best mark for him right? If he actually did that. And right now he's at 15.2% through 36 games this season. I think the injuries have complicated things a bit, but Bader's always had power and speed. If the plate skills actually get better, if he cuts the K rates down even into the low 20% range, that changes a lot about what he might do, and it gives him a chance to move up in the batting order too, because he's always been able to draw walks. So if you take the foundation of plate discipline that Bader has, improve the strikeout rate, suddenly he becomes a guy that becomes like more of a top of the order bat than a bottom of the order bat, and the counting stats get a lot better. So I'm kind of in on the power speed combo. I think splitting the difference right now between the current K rate and the past K rates, and then erring on the side of the past, is the right way to handle him. But that little glimmer of hope is right there for me, because it's such a massive improvement. Like going back to 25% on the K rate just almost seems like an overcorrection. And I think Bader costs like nothing in a trade. There's some shallow mixed leagues where he's still available on the wire. I think I mentioned this with Anthony Rendon before. I think one of the things I like about Bader is that his defense keeps him in the lineup. Even if he's stuck in the bottom third of the order, he plays a lot because the Cardinals value what he brings with his glove in center field.
Yeah, I agree with you on the K rate. Like, that would just be like, baseball is a game where we're always inherently dealing in small sample sizes, especially as we talk about it in the fantasy world, and where we're really more concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow and the day after and the rest of this season. And we're not necessarily looking at, you know, a three-year growth chart for Harrison Bader. So we're inherently dealing in these small samples. But at some point, small sample or no, you need to take what you're seeing at face value. And when a guy goes from the high 20 K rates that Harrison Bader had been at every other season of his career and cuts it to 15.2 in a small but meaningful enough sample of 138 plate appearances, we need to give him credit for that. We don't need to say he's going to be at 15.2 the rest of the season. But like you said, to expect him to suddenly revert to being a 27K percentage guy is just a little ridiculous and ignores what your eyes have shown you to the point of this season. Can you say maybe it's going to bump up to 20? Sure, I think that's fair, but we can't assume he's getting back to that strikeout level. And so there's room. I agree with you. There is room for him to move to the top of the order. I wonder what if they would really want to do that with Dylan Carlson, because that's who it's going to have to be. You've got Goldschmidt hitting two. You've got Arenado hitting three. You've got Tyler O'Neill hitting four. Those guys are locked in the top half of the order. So it would have to be coming at the expense of Dylan Carlson. And for a team that, you know, the Cardinals aren't used to saying we're out of it in the middle of July, but they're out of it. They're not going to the postseason this year. 8.5 games behind the Brewers, just as far behind the wild card. Like, this is not a postseason season for the Cardinals. I wonder if they would mess with Dylan Carlson's head, if that would mess with Dylan Carlson's head, but even risk messing with him and moving him down in the order. That's why I'd be a little bit hesitant to buy in. I think Dylan Carlson would really have to go in the tank for Harrison Bader to climb up the order. But as you said, still plenty of value in what he gives you if he's hitting in the bottom third. Let's move on to Willy Adames. I was going to go to Adolis Garcia, but I'll save him for a second because, again, Willy Adames is someone who I want your perspective on. You've obviously been watching quite a bit of him since the trade from Tampa to Milwaukee. He has been excellent. He has been nothing short of excellent for the Brewers, hitting for a ton of power, exactly what they needed up the middle, offensively and defensively, and what they needed in the middle of their order. I mean, this is a team that we didn't necessarily think was going to have the offensive struggles that they have had to this point of the season. Willy Adames has been just what the doctor ordered for this Brewers team. Can he keep up what he has been for Milwaukee the rest of the way?
So the projections are a bit lower than what he's been doing for the Brewers so far. I mean, a 307, 391, 566 line since becoming a Brewer, 24.7% K rate, 12.1% walk rate. Willy Adames has a 156 WRC plus as a Brewer now in 52 games. There is no point in his professional career. There's been no season where he's been that good, even in the lower levels of the minors. And actually, when you look back at Willy Adames' minor league track record, it's better than you realize, because he was young for the level. He was an above average hitter at every single stop. 2019 with the Rays was the first time as a pro that Willy Adames finished a season with a slightly below average WRC plus. That is actually pretty amazing. And I think it's interesting that the Rays, obviously with Wander and Bruhan and all the depth they had, like, there was going to be a point where they probably had to make a move. It was just interesting to me that they kind of moved him at a low point in his value. I mean, everything was going wrong for him, and he's talked about it. He didn't like hitting in the trop. The numbers bear it out. I think those splits were something we were all talking about at the time the Brewers acquired him. We just thought, wow, like just moving into a good hitter friendly environment. Maybe he's not the guy he was on the road all the time, but getting out of the trot might be a good thing. It's been a great thing for him so far. Mm-hmm. All this is a long way to say, like, I look at the numbers on the screen, the 255, 326, 462 line. I'd be comfortable expecting that. I think he could go a tick over it. 11 home runs. If you told me Willy Adames was going to hit 11 home runs in his last 60 games of the season, if you told me that 2 months ago, I would have said, that seems a little heavy. Maybe not. I'm buying in on the power now, too. And I think the other thing that could work in his favor, I would expect the Brewers to do something or a couple of somethings at the trade deadline that could make the supporting cast in this lineup even better. So maybe you get a little more with the counting stats than you'd expect. But I think we're looking at more like a 260, maybe like 265 hitter, 330-ish OBP, 460, 470 slug. So just a slight nudge on the projections. But I think the projections have a good feel for like the best of both worlds. And getting out of the trot, man, one of the biggest adjustments I've ever seen in season, I think, for a player getting traded from one good team to another.
It is remarkable how much better he has been since coming over to the Brewers. And I agree with you. This is a team that they're going to run away with this division, 6.5 games clear of the Reds. They're going to be the NL Central champs. They're going to get to cool their heels going into the postseason, where some of those West teams maybe are going to be having to really fight to stay out of the coin flip game. Brewers are going to be able to set things up nicely going into the postseason. But if they're going to make it through the postseason gauntlet, if they're going to beat, you know, say, two of those West teams, or if they're going to beat the Mets and the Dodgers and get to the postseason, I think they're going to need a little bit more in that offense. So we'd expect to see them do a little bit of something. Just really quick here on Adames, if something did go wrong, what would you be watching out for? If there is something that gives you concern about Adames the rest of the season, what is it?
It's probably the K rate. I mean, we saw it even last year when he was really good in the shortened season for the Rays. It was a 36.1% K rate. He was striking out 35.9% of the time before the trade. So I do wonder if the 24.7% strikeout rate we've seen from him so far in Milwaukee is actually a tick too good. Like, if he's more of like a 28% guy, and that's what holds that average down. That's what kind of pulls that OBP back down, is if he's not making contact as much as he's making contact so far.
All right, Adolis Garcia, the next guy up for us here. The rest of season projections, they're fair. I mean, bad batting average, bad OBP, hitting for power, stealing some bases still. That's basically what we expect from him after an incredibly hot start to the season. He has come a little bit back down to earth, hitting .262 with a .303 OBP and a .506 slugging percentage at this point of the season. I will be honest with you, though, DVR, I am a little bit worried about the power, and it's not because he doesn't have the power. It's not because when he makes connection with the ball, he can't hit it 470 feet. It's because he's striking out 30% of the time. He's walking less than 5% of the time. He is not necessarily forcing pitchers into the zone against him, and I just feel that the contact rate can catch up to him in a way that really hurts his power. It's already caught up to him in a way that hurts the batting average and hurts the OBP. And I think that batting average does come down a significant mark. I don't think we're going to see him anywhere near .262 at the end of the season. I think that .231 that is projected for him the rest of the year is fair and maybe even a little bit generous to him. I just really worry about the fact that he's going to strike out as much as he does, the fact that pitchers know they don't necessarily need to throw him a strike in an at-bat to get him out, is really going to hurt the power numbers too. And so that's where I am concerned about Adolis Garcia. And if I could find someone in my leagues who was power needy, I would maybe be trying to have those discussions, because I just think there is a lot more downside risk here than is being assumed. I don't think he is, you know, some version of his teammate Joey Gallo, where in seasons past we knew he was going to hit for power because Joey Gallo walks. Joey Gallo makes pitchers live in the zone if they're going to get him out. Adolis Garcia, without those walks, pitchers can really make him chase. I'm concerned about what that's going to do to the power the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for me is figuring out where the power goes. And I see the low average, low OBP, and I understand where that's coming from. But if he keeps playing every day, and I think with Leody Taveras still having some below average numbers overall at AAA, even though he's been better lately than he was earlier this season in the minors, I think he's safe. I think Garcia will continue to be a fixture in this lineup throughout the second half. And I think that gives him a pretty good counting stats floor, even if the rate stats leave something to be desired. So if he hit 13 home runs the rest of the way, he'd finish with 35 this season. If he stole five more bases, he'd finish with 13. I don't know if I'm buying him at quite that level. I think it's more like 8 homers the rest of the way, 2 to 3 steals, and it's possible you get a slash line or at least a batting average worse than what we have in the projection. I think that's in his range of outcomes as well. But I think the difficult question you have to answer, if you have a good team right now and you picked up Garcia earlier this season, do you actually put him on your bench? Do you make him your extra outfielder? Like, what do you do if you can't trade him? Is he a drop in shallow mixed leagues, even though he's been amazing from a roto perspective to this point? Like, what's the action that you actually want to take with Garcia in situations where you're dependent upon him?
I mean, if I'm right about where I stand on him, and I think that's perfect. I think something like 8 homers and 2 steals is where he's going to be the rest of the season because of just the propensity to swing and miss. Can't steal a base if you're not on base, right? And so I think 8-2 is a fair spot for him. So if that ends up being the case, still too good to drop, still too much of a ceiling, still too large a possibility that we're wrong and he turns it around and to drop him. But I do think he's more of that bench bat, more of that extra guy, more of the guy who you plug in when it feels like he's got a good set of matchups, something like that. He does feel like he's more along those lines to me than the rock solid everyday plug him in your lineup and don't worry about him, don't think about him player that he was over the first half of the season. I think that's ultimately where it comes in. So hopefully we're wrong because he's been a super fun story this year, but I just think those strikeout issues are going to keep him from maxing out the power-speed combo that we saw from him in the first half of the year.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, DVR, before we get to our last couple of players on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast, got a question from viewer Micah McClain I want to throw up on this screen here. Thoughts on Touki Toussaint or other upside starting pitchers for the stretch run? A quality starts league. Touki had a nice start last night, looking good. Obviously, the walk issue is always going to be looming over his head. But it's easy to say, oh man, almost knocked over my monitor over here. Easy to say that Touki Toussaint clearly has upside and maybe a decently safe spot in the Braves rotation.
Yeah, just the need they have right now for him is significant. I think what's interesting is I'm looking at the Stuff Plus numbers to get a feel for how good the pitches actually are. Mixed 4 pitches pretty well in that outing and pitched deeper in his rehab assignment than I expected, which opened the door for him to pitch deep in that start last night as well. The splitter looks really good. The curveball looks like an above average pitch. The fastball's grayed out very poorly. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's able to move the fastball at least to an acceptable sort of level, or if that's a problem spot for him where it's either he's walking the world or he has major home run issues. Clearly there is a ceiling there with Touki, though, a nice ceiling, because he's missed a lot of bats when he's been healthy enough to pitch at the big league level. And we've seen a guy with a long-term high walk rate and Robbie Ray kind of figure it out this year. So maybe there's a little more optimism in the air as a result of that. But I think Touki for me fits a little better in like a 15-team league or something deeper you could probably justify picking him up in a 12 because I think we're going to see a lot of attrition with pitching in general over the final 2 months with guys going down with injuries or fatigue setting in and results simply just not being where they were earlier in the season. But I do think there's still a lot of risk in this profile despite a nice season debut for him yesterday.
All right, let's get on to the last few players we're going to talk about here. Ryan McMahon, a guy you pointed out before we started the show, is someone we haven't talked too much about recently, so let's talk about him a little bit. Rest of season numbers, they feel pretty fair to me. You love seeing the 12 homers pop up. He's going to be playing, and that's great. There's going to be a line on playing time for him, even if somehow Trevor Story stayed in Colorado, which isn't going to be the case, but no matter what, there's a line on playing time for Ryan McMahon. Maybe we see him, you know, start to settle in as an everyday player who can be the sort of player who delivers the numbers that we see on the screen. What are your expectations for McMahon the rest of the way?
Yeah, I think the projection is really fair, and it's almost identical to the per-game production that he's delivered for everybody here in 2021. I think what's really interesting about McMahon is that he's actually hitting the ball in the air more than he's ever hit the ball in the air as a big leaguer. It's the highest, the lowest ground ball rate of his career since 2016. And this is a guy that was having difficulties hitting the ball in the air the last few years with the Rockies. So I think this power surge we've seen from him is absolutely real. And I think the reason I wanted to throw the projection out there is because I think you could probably talk yourself into the possibility of McMahon going 15 or 20 points over that batting average at some point in the not so distant future, whether that's the second half of the season or the future. I look at this guy and I see someone who had AA and AAA back in 2017 was striking out less than 20% of the time. And I think when he debuted in 2017, also had about a 20% K rate. Very, very small sample that year. So I just look at the K rates we've seen from him so far, and I wonder if there's one more notch of improvement. 26.3% that he has right now is the best of his actual like full seasons with Colorado. But if he can shave another few percentage points off that K rate, maybe we actually have a 30 home run guy on our hands, if not this season, actually in 2022.
Yeah, that's another good thing to look at for the rest of the season. We still think so much about the season that we're in, but a lot of times the guys who we're going to be excited about next year really start to show themselves at this point of the current season. Ryan McMahon looking like someone who can be on that track. I'm going to go off script a little bit here, DVR. I originally was going to throw in Yoan Moncada, but we're running out of time. And as I was looking a little bit closer to showtime, someone who just seems a little bit more intriguing to me is AJ Pollock. I'll just say on Yoan Moncada, three homers in his last four games, three homers in the last 3 days. There was a doubleheader in there for the White Sox. I think the power's waking up. And if the power's waking up and Eloy Jimenez is going to get added back to this lineup, Yoan Moncada might just be one of our second half MVPs. Anyway, forget about that. Let's talk about AJ Pollock. I think the per game numbers that you see on the screen here are fair. I just think that first number, DVR, 35 games, I think that might be a little bit low. I know the Dodgers love mixing and matching, and you know you only have guys like, you know, Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger, Max Muncy, Justin Turner. We can count on them to be everyday players. I think there's a little bit more here for AJ Pollock because of the injuries. You know, Gavin Lux now on the IL with a strained hamstring. Corey Seager seems to be getting ready to go out on a rehab assignment, or come back to the team. But it's still going to be a little bit of time for Corey Seager to get back. And so long as even just one of those guys is out, I do think that that AJ Pollock has a line on, you know, 5 out of every 6 games playing for the Dodgers. So I think 35 games is a low projection for AJ Pollock, and if we get him more into the 45 or 50 game range for the rest of the season, even stuck in the bottom third of the Dodgers order, that power is going to come through, and that power is going to be there for him. It's been there this season with a 523 slugging percentage, 13 homers for AJ Pollock in 236 trips to the plate. I think there's a lot to like about him the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, the lineup is probably better down the stretch than it was earlier in the season. We've talked about the return of Seager, Bellinger being healthy, maybe getting a better second half out of Mookie Betts than first half. But Pollock is just a good player in his own right. I would agree with you. That playing time projection seems pretty light. I would say for a 7-game week, he probably starts 6 games typically. And that's a bigger share than the playing time currently reflects in the projections. It's important to bring this up because I think a lot of people use the rest of season projections to determine what kinds of trades they want to make. And Pollock is the kind of guy, because he's a little bit old, a little bit boring, he doesn't cost that much. He's absolutely the kind of outfielder you should trade for. He's at least going to give you something in every category. You're not expecting a lot of steals, but he's got 4 steals in the last 124 games, if I'm doing the math correctly on the fly. Like, if you combine his last 2 seasons, 29 homers, 68 RBIs, 61 runs scored, 4 steals, and a .277 average, that's really, really strong across the board. Always has a kind of like a league average walk rate, doesn't strike out that much, and has a supporting cast that props up those runs scored and RBI totals. So I'm definitely in on Pollock. There's no real signs of skills loss. That's why I want to keep going after him while I can. I think there's also this like lingering elevated injury risk concern with him because he had a lot of pretty bad injuries earlier in his career. You guys might remember the one when he slid into home plate during spring training and broke his arm. That was a really bad injury in spring training. So he had a couple seasons where he lost like most of the year. And I think that's kind of made people think, oh, he's just not that durable. Like, yeah, he's below average in terms of like your durability expectations, but he's better than your expectations in terms of per game output. And he's certainly going to play more than that projection suggests that he will. So you want to take advantage of that in any place where you can go get him.
Yeah, it seems to be one of these guys who pays a tax for being, I don't want to say a different player, because you said it's a lot of the same skills that we saw when he was in Arizona, but for having like clearly more roto value earlier in his season when he was a big time power to speed guy, and then that fell off. A lot of that was because of all those injuries, and he just got a little bit older, and he seems to be paying a tax still where people say, oh, he's not the guy he was in Arizona, and they equate that with he's not a guy, period, for me, the rest of the way. And I just don't think that's the case with him. And again, we don't want to beat a dead horse, but it keeps coming back to that 35 games. That is a low number. Let's flip that. 53 games feels more likely for A.J. Pollock the rest of the way than 35 games. He is going to play and play and play for this team. And sure, if Gavin Lux and Corey Seager are both back to health, then you bump Chris Taylor out to the outfield, then maybe he has a problem. But we're not going to see Dave Roberts sit him down too often to get Matt Beattie at bats, or to, you know, get to move things around where Albert Pujols starts at first and Max Muncy slides over to second and Chris Taylor bumps out to the outfield, or Zach McKinstry. Like, he's not losing significant number of at-bats to guys like that. The real risk for him is Lux and Seager both getting healthy, Chris Taylor becoming a regular outfielder, and then maybe we're a little bit worried about the playing time. And even then, he's still got that part-time job. So there are a lot of things that would have to happen before we're at all concerned about A.J. Pollock's playing time, a guy who I would love to go out and acquire if I could right now. That's going to do it for us here on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. You can still get in the door at The Athletic, $3.99 a month. Go to theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. Thanks to everyone who watched us on YouTube. Thanks to all of you out there also listening to the podcast version of this. DVR and I, actually, you're out on Sunday, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, me and Al Melchior will be coming at you on Sunday with this week's edition of our Fab and Waivers pod. That's our next episode, so until then, enjoy all the baseball coming your way. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.